Welcome to the Leadership Playbook, the show where successful leaders share what they learned to get to where they are. This podcast is an offshoot of the Albers Executive Speaker Series.
And it's brought to you by RSM US LLP, the nation's leading provider of assurance, tax, and consulting services focused on the middle market.
I'm your host, Joe Phillips, the Dean of Seattle University's Albers School of Business and Economics. Thank you so much for joining us to this edition of the Albers Executive Speaker Series. My name is Joe Phillips. I'm Dean of the Albers School, and it's a great pleasure to welcome everybody here tonight and also welcome Sean Tresvant, the CEO of Taco Bell. So our speaker, Sean Tresvant, started as CEO of Taco Bell January 1st. He started at Taco Bell 2 years ago as Global Chief Brand Officer. And prior to joining Taco Bell, he spent more than 15 years in leadership roles at Nike, including Chief Marketing Officer of the Jordan brand. And before Nike, he did branding work at Pepsi and Sports Illustrated. Sean earned his undergraduate and master's degree in communications at Washington State, where he played on the men's basketball team. But more importantly to us, he got his MBA at Seattle University. Yeah. Now, he's really nervous tonight because his father's in the audience, so we have to cut him a little bit of slack. And so I'm going to leave it to Sean to maybe tell us about his dad and Ernie, too. So without further ado, let's have Sean come up.
Thank you. How's everybody doing tonight? Good? Being here tonight with you guys is really, really special for me for many reasons. But I'm happy to be here. I'm excited to be here. This state is home for me, so it's special. And obviously, Seattle U is a very special place. It's probably most special is because my dad went to school here. And so from, I believe it was 61 to 64, they had a really good men's basketball team, John Tresvant, Ernie Dunston, and many, many others. So growing up, I would hear a lot of stories about Seattle University. I'd hear about the stories on the basketball court. I'd hear about how great of a university it was. I'd hear about the people of just Seattle and how much the state, the city, and the school meant to my dad. So it is full circle that 44 years later, after he played basketball here, I went to graduate school here. So it's an incredibly special moment for me to be sitting on the stage talking to you guys about my experience in the city and school when my dad went here 44 years ago. So that's why this is a big night for me. You usually don't have your dad in the crowd when you're talking about your journey, but it's special. So I thought I would just take 10 minutes to show to tell you about my journey, and then we can get into the Q&A. Let's start kind of from the beginning. Born and raised at Seattle University, and I never had any idea that I would become a CEO of Taco Bell. My philosophy in life has always been where your feet are. So I grew up in Seattle. I had the chance to play basketball at Washington State University. After playing basketball, I'm not 6'7 like my dad. I wish I had a few more inches, but I realized pretty quick that I probably wasn't going to play professional basketball. It was always a dream of me, but I probably wasn't going to do that given size and skill. So if I'm not going to be a professional basketball player, I still wanted to be the best at whatever I decided to do. Washington State was really good in communications. It was a top communications school, so I wanted to be a sportscaster. ESPN was just taking off at that time. And I thought I would be the next Stuart Scott. I thought I'd be the next great ESPN sportscaster. So I decided to go back and get my master's in communications at Washington State. And a funny thing happened. I got humbled really quick when I got back to Seattle after my undergraduate degree and my master's degree, and I couldn't get a job. I thought jobs would just be knocking on the door, and I came back and I couldn't get a job. And so my parents said, hey, you can't pout. You gotta get out there and you gotta figure it out. So I started working at Gala Wines. I merchandised wines. I was in the back room, you know, dragging bottles of wine out, dusting them off, putting them on the shelf. And one day, a person saw me and they liked my work ethic. Had nothing to do with my education. Had nothing to do with where I went to school. He said, you have great work ethic and I'd like you to come work for Campbell Soup, which was another great brand. Needless to say, after the holidays, I called Campbell Soup. I worked for a salesperson at Campbell Soup. We'd go back to Camden, New Jersey, where Campbell Soup was located. And I loved the marketing presentations, whether it was the chunky soup or the V8 or the condensed soup. brand management was like something that touched me at that time. So I asked my boss, well, how do you become a brand manager? And he said, you got to go back and get your MBA. And I said, well, I got a master's in communications. And he said, no, you got to go back and get your MBA. So that time, I was like, where do I go back and get my MBA? And I would tell you, without a doubt, the reputation of this school, the reputation of the business school, the reputation of the people, the staff, the faculty, everything in between, it was a pretty quick decision that I decided to come back at Seattle University and get my MBA. It was a great 2 years. It was fast and furious. I met some great professors, learned a lot. But after I got my MBA, I had to make a decision to stay with Campbell Soup or do something else. Me and my sister are really close. She moved to New York, so I moved to New York with her. In New York, I worked for a company called Reckitt and Benckiser. I worked for Pepsi. I worked for Sports Illustrated. And then I had the chance to move back west and work for Nike. And for me, Nike was like the holy grail. It was the place that I always thought I would work, always wanted to work. And to get the opportunity to work at Nike was like the top of the top. And it was great. It was a great 15 years there. I learned a lot. I always tell people I got my MBA from Seattle University, but I got my PhD in marketing from Nike. I really did. 16 years, great company, great people. I brought my full self to work, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit. But after 15 years, the trajectory started to slow. The fire burning in my belly started to slow. The learning started to slow. So I had to make a really tough decision. Do I leave the company that I worked for 15 years and continue to jog? Or do I go to a place that's a little uncomfortable, a little scary, but it will give me a chance to learn more, run around the bases, get up and have the fire back in my belly? And I chose to leave Nike. And I would tell people I haven't looked back one day. Taco Bell is an amazing brand. I love all my experiences throughout my career, but I feel like now, at this time, with the job I have, I'm truly bringing my whole self to work. Taco Bell is a big brand, about $15, $16 billion, about 8,500 restaurants, both 7,500 in the U.S., 1,000 internationally. A brand that's pushing the envelope forward on digital with the consumer. And I'm really, really happy that all my experiences, including my experience here at Seattle U, gave me the opportunity to be doing what I'm doing. So that's me in a nutshell. It's been a crazy journey, like I said. I never thought, being from Kirkland, Washington, or going to the school, that my career would take the path it has. But if I could give you guys any advice, enjoy the journey. Be where your feet are planted. I think if I was always looking at that next job, I wouldn't have enjoyed all the experience I've had professionally, that I got the chance to be with other people who taught me a lot or I learned from. And I think that's important as you guys go through life, is just make sure that you don't only live the length of life, make sure you're living the width of life as well. So that's me. I am open to some Q&A. I think we're going to have some panelists come up, and then we can kind of get after it.
All right. Thanks, Sean. That was a great opening for us. Let me introduce the panelists, and then we'll get to the questions. All right. So first, there's Chance Ringard. He's a senior from Oahu, Hawaii, and a double major in marketing and business analytics and minor in economics. He has served as an Albers New Student Mentor and been involved in various student organizations such as Alpha Kappa Psi and the Hawaii Club. And after graduation, Chance wants to work with customer data to identify strategies that will benefit and empower consumers. All right, then next to Chance is Annie Katrina Lee. Annie is a seasoned marketing executive with nearly two decades of experience in consumer tech, working at companies like Twitch, Pinterest, Amazon, and Microsoft. She now serves as an advisor and fractional CMO for startups and organizations. She earned her master's of communication with UW and her undergraduate degree in marketing here at Seattle University. She's an engaged alumna, having served on the alumni board and as an adjunct faculty for the Albers School. And currently, she volunteers on the Albers Marketing Advisory Board. And then furthest from me is Anna Cornell. Anna is a student in our MBA in Sport and Entertainment Management program. She grew up in Yakima, Washington, graduated from Carroll College in Helena, Montana. After graduation, she joined the Navy and served for 12 years as a surface warfare officer on cruisers and destroyers across the U.S. and abroad. She currently works at Boeing in product support for the KC-46 tanker team. So, Chance, why don't you take the first question?
Sure. Hello. Thank you so much for being here today.
Of course.
I think I'm going to start off with a question regarding a very popular food item. So as Chief Brand Officer, you and your team are responsible for bringing back the Mexican pizza.
Yeah.
And so that was a very successful release, relaunch. And so my question is, kind of looking back, what do you think led to the big success of bringing back that food item?
Yeah, the Mexican pizza was a great story in marketing and a great story in how a consumer responds to your product. So the story of Mexican pizza is during COVID, Taco Bell had to make some tough calls. As you can imagine, it's all about making sure during tough times like COVID, you're driving profit. At the time, Mexican pizza was selling seven a day. Seven, when I say seven a day, the average Mexican pizza sales per store was about seven. And so it was an item that, while we thought it was a little bit of a icon within the menu, we had to make some tough decisions, so we had to take it off the menu. Now, fast forward post-COVID, there's a very popular pop singer named Doja Cat who...
Love her.
Who tweeted at Taco Bell and very unapologetically said, bring the Mexican pizza back. And so at that moment, we're reading the tweets live, and we decided to have some fun. And I think one of the best things about Taco Bell is like we like to have fun, and we like to be a little bit zig when other people are zagging. So we reached out to Doja Cat and said, let's have some fun with this. If you're willing to kind of play along with us and have some fun, we'll bring the Mexican pizza back. So the highlights were she was all in, and we let Doja be Doja, which is a little scary.
So yeah,
which is a little scary. We weren't writing her tweets, we weren't writing her content. We let her be her. 90% of it worked out okay. She announced at Coachella that the Mexican pizza was coming back. Now, come the day it's going to come back. I can't remember the exact day it's going to come back, but it was in the spring. So now remember, before COVID, we're selling seven a day. And for those who work in the restaurant business, working in a restaurant is very, very hard. You have to prepare meals. You got crazy customers. There's a lot of things going on in a restaurant. So when we came back, our best estimate is that we were going to sell about 200 a day. And so we had ingredients for 200 a day. We trained team members on how to make, you know, be quick on the line with making 200 Mexican pizzas a day. It launched and we were selling 500 a day. And so you can imagine, you know, team members in the restaurant making 500 Mexican pizzas per day. And we sold out. So it's like the sneaker business. It was very bad, but it was good in the same time. So we had to come apologize to our fans that we sold out. So we didn't only bring it back once, we brought it back twice. And it was a really successful brand. But it was a masterclass in how to market a product using a celebrity like Doja Cat and let them do them and not try to script them too much.
Awesome. Very brilliant. Thank you.
Yeah.
Speaking of your marketing background, how did your marketing background prepare you for your CEO role?
It's an untraditional path to the CEO seat for sure. But I've always been curious. And so while I was in the function of marketing, I was always curious about P&Ls. While I was in the function of marketing, I was always curious about, we'll call it digital and digital connectivity with consumers. And while I was the CEO, there was nothing like I would read a lot. I'd understand different parts of the business. I just think if you're in business, you can't be siloed to your function. You should be curious about other parts of the business you're in, whatever it is. No, I've always been one that's curious. So while I was a marketeer, I had a little bit of a long stretch on what other things and how other parts of the business worked at Nike or Taco Bell. I think that's the thing that helped me the most is that I was seen as a little bit somebody more of a generalist that had a marketing expertise versus somebody that could only do marketing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I have a non-marketing question from the marketer in the room. So I've worked at a lot of companies to know that internal brand and internal culture can greatly impact the success of a company. And now that you're CEO of Taco Bell, I'm just curious, how are you taking your past experiences and incorporating that into the culture? What will remain the same? And what will be more of your vibe as the company goes forward?
So let's talk about the latter first. What's important to me is that I'm always going to be authentic, Sean. When I first started at Taco Bell, my former boss, who is a dear friend of mine and a mentor of mine, talked about me coming over to Taco Bell. And I said, Mark, I will take this job if I can be Sean. And what that means is I'm going to wear sneakers. I'm probably not going to wear a blue blazer. I'm probably not going to talk in the King's English. But if you can take all of Sean, you're going to get all of Sean. And I think it's really important, at least for me and the people who work at Jobs, is that you are yourself. I didn't want to be somebody at home and then have to put on a face or somebody different at work. So my personal brand was always authentic me and don't change for anybody, which is really important to me, because I think when you start changing for a job or for a position or for a team, things go wrong pretty quick. So for me personally, I'm just going to do me, and I've always kind of been the same way. And then I think the higher you go up, my job is not to run finance. My job is not to even run marketing anymore. My job is not to run real estate. My job is to create the conditions so people can thrive. My job is to make sure the culture is right. My job is to make sure the team is working together. And it's a little bit of a mindset shift, because sometimes I want to roll up the sleeves and jump in and do it. But that's not my job anymore. My job is truly to create the culture, the atmosphere, the environment, so the team can thrive, is what's most important in my job now.
Thank you.
All right, so next question I have. One interesting thing that I found out about one of your marketing approaches is that you didn't focus on a demographic, but a psychographic, which is a group of people that share common values. And I believe in the interview you identified this as the cultural rebel.
Well, how you guys did your research.
And so I was just curious, how do you identify the cultural rebel, and what was kind of the process of coming up with that marketing segment?
Yeah, Taco Bell always wants to be a brand within culture. We think it's our secret sauce. We think it differentiates us from other brands out there, whether you're in the QSR industry or not. We want a brand that has an epicenter, that it really understands culture. And so youth, or Gen Z, is the target we're going after. Now, we're going to sell to everybody, you know, 5 to 55 and beyond. But who we're going to speak to will be this consumer we call the cultural rebel. Think of the cultural rebel as a subset of Gen Z who are curious, they're unconventional, they're making change, they're driving things forward, they're the ones TikToking, they're the ones going to your restaurant and posting on Instagram. That's who we're speaking to, and it's a little bit of mind shift. We're going to sell to everybody, but the example I'll give you, if you're at a party just shouting to everybody, nobody's going to hear you. But when you go up to a person or an individual or a group and you talk to them directly, they're going to hear you. And so who we're trying to talk to is a Gen Z group called the Cultural Rebel, while not alienating anybody on the edges.
Got it. And I guess so far in your new position, are you continuing to use that marketing segment, and have you seen continued success?
Yeah, they're trying to keep me out of marketing, but I know a back door in. But yeah, what I say makes companies successful, no matter company, 3 things. Strategy. Does the company have the right strategy to win? And I think we have the right strategy, and that includes the cultural rebel. The second, you have the right team. Is your team a bunch of A-lister all-stars who can drive the business forward? And the third thing is culture. Mm-hmm. And right now, with the cultural rebel and the brand and future-proofing the brand, I think we have the right strategy. I think we have a championship team. And I think we are working, it's probably on me more than anybody, on the culture.
Cool. Thank you.
Sir, that's a great segue. It's okay. As if you knew my question.
Okay.
Which was on culture. As a CEO, I imagine that you have a large hand in shaping culture, organizational culture. How do you go about shaping that culture? Do you create a vision? Do you have a vision for that?
Yeah.
I'll stop talking and let you answer that.
No, it's great. I'm thinking. These are all great questions. Where I come from, leadership is most important. I think leadership drives culture. There's a saying that culture eats strategy for breakfast, but I think within that, culture is driven by great leaders. And so when I started CEO, but I kind of did it before the official date, I have 3 leadership philosophies that I wanted the brand to believe in. The first was this idea of it's about the we versus me, and not me, Sean, but it's about the team, it's about the brand before the individual. I think great teams, whether you're on a sports team or an intramural team or just a work team, the teams that win are the teams that make it about the collective versus the individual. That was my first leadership philosophy. My second one is be the change. Obviously, it comes from Gandhi, and that Leadership is not a title, a level, a pay scale. Leadership is individual. There's leaders in this room, and within Taco Bell, there's leaders who are senior execs, and there's leaders who are assistants. And it doesn't matter your position. Don't be afraid to be the change to make the brand better. 100% anybody can lead, and everybody should be able to make change to make the brand better. And the third is this idea of empowerment. And Taco Bell is a $16 billion brand, global brand, with about 1,000 people who work there. We have to be able to empower the next generation, coach, mentor, develop the next generation to one day take our seats. So if you have great leaders will create a great culture, and it will be the separator from brands.
Thank you. Yeah.
As you mentioned, there's a lot of leaders and to be leaders in this room. And for someone who is very experienced, what are some of the hardest lessons that you've learned in your career that you wish you knew when you were finishing college?
It's a long time ago. I think there's probably three or four that I would say are along my journey that if I had to do it all over again, if I had something to tell my younger self, I would tell, don't be in a hurry. Enjoy every experience along the way. And sometimes they don't make sense. And I've worked at companies, when you read the bio, the journey seems very linear. It seems like perfect, like nothing happened. This guy must have hit the lottery. There was a lot of pitfalls. There was a lot of left turns. There were a lot of trap doors. But I feel I learned as much from the trap doors, the pitfalls, the left turns, the bad experiences as I did the good. And so when I say don't be in a hurry, even though I worked at Sports Illustrated for 2 years, it was a left turn. It wasn't my favorite. But I learned a lot about who I want to be as a leader. I learned a lot about what kind of company I want to work at. So I try to take something from the good and the bad experiences. And sometimes when we're in a hurry, we miss things. So I'd say don't be in a hurry. The second one is have a North Star. A lot of people would say, hey, how do I work at Nike? And I think that's an incredible North Star. I think Taco Bell is a North Star. Or being from Seattle, you want to work at Microsoft. But I also think we're holistic and we're a collective of our experiences. So while you might want to work at the Seattle Mariners one day, get the experiences that will help you get there. And along my way, I feel like I wasn't in a hurry and that the experiences I've had all added up to something that Taco Bell thought was interesting versus a very linear experience.
Thank you. I can relate.
Exactly.
All right, so this is my last question, I believe. So as an undergrad, I'm currently focused in marketing and business analytics, and I think that's perfect because at one of the conferences you were at, I believe it was called Create, you had four wonderful marketing strategies.
Yeah.
And one of them was math and magic.
Yeah.
Which basically implies that for a good marketing strategy, you need to be able to utilize magic as well as math or data. And so my question is, do you see the future of Taco Bell utilizing more data? And then another question, follow-up question, would be, are there any times where you needed to use data to make an impactful analysis that you couldn't have made without data? Yeah.
That's a great question. I think today, marketeers or business people have to balance the scale. I don't think you can be all math, and I don't think you can be all magic. And I think it's tricky. There is more data than ever today. And I think a lot of brands can paralyze themselves in decision-making through data. Data is really, really important, and it should inform how you get somewhere. But I've seen companies that overanalyze, overcorrect, over-rely on an insight or a piece of data, and they wait too long, and they miss the moment. Mm-hmm. On the other side, if it's all gut, if it's all heart, if it's all, here's what I think we should do, that's probably not the best way ever. So a little bit of a cheated answer. I think best companies today balance both. I don't think you can be all math, and I think it's dangerous these days to be all magic. And I think if you balance the scale, the pendulum somewhere in between, where you can still, man, that's a great idea, and I think we just should just do it with the, and here's what the consumer or the insight or the data is telling us, that's probably the magic kind of unlock when it's kind of balanced on both versus the scales are tipped one way or another.
Definitely. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sir, you touched on mentors.
Yeah.
And I was just curious if you could tell us about a mentor in your career that's meant a lot to you and the types of things you talked about, the types of things that they gave you advice.
Yeah. Well, besides the gentleman over there, the handsome gentleman over there, besides kind of family mentors, there was this mentor of mine named Gino Fizzanotti. He was my boss at Nike, and by far, he was the best marketeer I ever worked with. And while it was interesting, he was not easy on me. Nike is a place where it's not for the faint of heart, and he gave me tough feedback, and he let me know it. And at the time, I don't know how I took it, I don't know, I didn't see it, but I didn't realize he was making me a lot better as a marketeer. And there's many times where we used to get into it, there's many times that I thought it was perfect, and he said, it's not perfect, you had to go back and do it. But bearing through it with Gino and understanding how he thought and how, it's almost like the Karate Kid. I didn't even know the skills I didn't even know, right? Until something came up and I painted the fence and I waxed the car. And I think mentorship is really, really important. We're all sitting here because somebody took a chance on us or we had somebody to talk to or learn from. But it's not always easy. It's not always rainbows. And Gino was a great mentor, but I didn't realize what he was trying to do because he was so tough on me. But at the end of the day, he was just trying to make me better. And sometimes you got to accept that you're not great or you need to learn, or and everybody has a different style of learning and teaching. And he was a great mentor, but it wasn't one of those, let's go have a cup of coffee and a croissant and talk about how good you are. It was not that type of mentorship.
Fair enough. Thanks. Yeah.
So speaking of mentors,
yeah.
I'm curious about young mentors. I have a 5-year-old who humbles me every day, and I have been learning a lot from Gen Z. And I think Gen Z has been teaching us a lot about just values and even marketing best practices. And so what's a pleasant surprise that you've learned from someone who reported to you or maybe was on your team any time in your career? So reverse learning, I suppose.
Yeah, I have a teenager and a 22-year-old. So right in the epicenter of, we'll call it a cultural rebel, a Gen Zer, and somebody who just knows pop culture. So I get humbled every day. If I don't know the latest thing on TikTok, if I haven't seen a piece of content that's trending, I get humbled every day. And the funny thing is as a CEO, they expect I know everything. So they might be talking, or she's like, Dad, did you see this thing on TikTok by so-and-so and so-and-so? It's got like 1 million views. And I'll say no. And they're like, you haven't seen, like I'm supposed to know everything that's ever happened in the world. And when I don't know an acronym or I don't know a creator or I don't know the newest style, it's very humbling to ask them. But the best thing about that, when I work in, I say, hey, did you guys see that piece of content? They're like, how did he know? How did he know? That just dropped last night. How did he know about that? So I use them as leverage.
Okay, so I have some questions that the audience gave in advance. The first one I'm going to ask is this, Sean. What was your biggest lesson from working on the Jordan brand that you could bring to the Taco Bell brand?
That's a good one. Jordan is an incredible brand. I don't know. There was a trivia question about this. How many brands in the world logo is themselves and still living? Ralph Lauren is not it because he's not the polo guy. It's a trivia question. I forgot the answer when I worked an answer. I know, but it's like it's a handful. And Jordan is one of those people who is still alive, and it's actually him who's the logo. And so working for that brand, I came up at a time when I told you I loved ESPN. Every highlight ESPN when I watched it at 8 o'clock at night was Michael Jordan, dunking, scoring 52. So when you're able to work for that brand who you idolized and grew up with, it's pretty special. Now imagine that, and then he walks into the room and you're like, jaw drops, you gotta smack yourself, tell yourself to be cool. But it was like a dream come true to be able to work for that brand and that man and understand kind of what motivated him. I'm sure you guys all saw The Last Dance. What motivated him to be so great? And I was just a sponge learning from him, listening to him, because how he was on the basketball court is the same way he is in business. He doesn't want to lose. He wants to win. He wants to be the best. He is the same. There's no, talk about authentic self. He is no different than he was, you know, winning 6 championships with the Bull that he is in the boardroom. And so it was an incredible experience. And what I think that I learned at Jordan that I brought to Taco Bell is that the consumer decides. A lot of times companies get a little full on themselves and they think they know what's best for the consumer. They think because they're big or because they're successful, they now will tell how consumers should think, act, or feel. Nike and Jordan was about the consumer. It was about making sure they understood what makes consumers tick. And if I brought anything to Taco Bell, it was like, let's make sure we're delivering, we're serving delicious, craveable, innovative food that the consumer wants, not what we think they want.
Speaking of Jordan.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite Jordan or Nike sneaker?
Yeah, they asked me in the class before, how many sneakers do I have? I'm probably embarrassed to say this now. I don't think my dad knows this. So I just moved from Portland to California, to Los Angeles. And in the move, I had to count my sneakers. I clocked in at 502.
Solid.
I clocked in at 502. It's a habit. And it's hard. It's like picking kids. It's like hard. You got 500 shoes.
Yeah, that's fair. It's fair.
It's hard. It's hard.
I would never ask you to do that.
Yeah.
But it's hard.
But there's some that are very special to me. There's some that, like my first pair that I like got at Nike. And I got a habit. I stopped collecting because there's no more room in my house. But I'm a collector, so it's something that someday, like, I will pass down to my kids. They probably won't get it. But I just love sneakers, and I got a little bit of a habit.
I can understand that. So what was your first pair that you got?
My first pair was an Air Jordan 2 for you sneakerheads in there. If you think about the Air Jordan 2 now, Air Jordan 1 was a red and black one that he wore in his first game, and he got fined. So it was a different take on the basketball shoe because it had a different silhouette, and it was red and black, and at the time, there's only white basketball sneakers. So that was pretty special. But when I walked into the Foot Locker at Bellevue Square and saw the AJ2, which was made in Italy, had a reptile print, didn't have the swoosh on it, was just crafted, and the materials were nothing like I ever saw before. And so when I saw that, that's what I think my first love with sneakers was, because it was the craft, it was the make, it was the way it made you feel. I put it on, I thought I could go from the free throw line. It was just different. That was different.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Well, what was the favorite?
My favorite, which one?
Your favorite of all the sneakers.
My favorite is the 2 or the 11. The 11 is, I look at them at works of art. They're not even sneakers. The 11 is just an incredible work of art. If you just look at that shoe and the patent leather and the silhouette, and it's a work of art.
So if we had to take the same favorite theme to Taco Bell, yeah. What is your favorite item on the Taco Bell menu?
The one thing at Taco Bell, sneakers is an easy habit. When at Taco Bell, the first day is there's a test kitchen in Taco Bell, and when you work at Taco Bell or when you're new at Taco Bell, you got to try the menu. And I don't say one or two; you got to try the menu. So, and then every time we come out with a new item, you got to try every variation of it. So it's like I can't pick a favorite Taco Bell, but my go-to order is 2 crunchy tacos, bean burrito, and a Baja Blast. And I would tell you, I grew up eating Taco Bell. A lot of people say, did you grow up eating Taco Bell? I grew up eating Taco Bell. I love the brand. I love the food. And it never gets old. Like, we have a Taco Bell in our cafeteria. We have a test kitchen. There's one by my house in L.A. But crunchy tacos are just the thing.
This is a little more of a silly question, but when I told a lot of my friends that I had this opportunity to be a panelist, they asked me to ask this one question, and the question is, what are the chances of bringing back the quesarito? And if not, what is the reasoning? We would like to know.
It just got real. There's a strategy on a... It's funny. I told the story when I started Taco Bell. When I worked at Nike, I would go to parties, I'd go to restaurants, and I'd be the most popular person because they'd say, "What's it like working with Michael Jordan?" Or, "What's about the sneaker?" Or, "How is Kobe?" They'd ask a lot of questions. I think I'm more popular now because now when I go to places and I say, "We're Taco Bell," they're like, "Hey, when is the quesarito? When's the double decker taco? When's the caramel empanada coming back?"
And Churrito's
coming back. I mean, there's things on the menu that I don't even remember, and they're coming back. And we have a plan. It's all going to come back. It's got to come back in phases. But last year, for the first time, we pitted two items and the fans voted on it. And the response to have the fans vote on which item you want to come back, we thought we had something, but people are passionate about their Taco Bell. People are passionate about things back. So throughout the next, we'll call it 2 years, we're going to put two things against each other and the fans will decide what comes back. So get out there and vote.
So it's in your hands.
Yes, get out there and vote.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The fans will decide.
The fans will decide.
Sir, you talked about leadership.
Yeah.
I'm curious about a moment in your career where you realized that you were a leader based on the situation, and what did that moment teach you about leadership?
I told a story to the other class is that when COVID happened and everybody was on Teams or Zoom, I wasn't really good with the mute button. Sometimes you forget that the mute button is not on. I had an unfortunate incident with the mute button not being on. Two things happened. One, I realized that what I said while the mute button wasn't on didn't make somebody feel so good. The second thing, which I think all leaders do, is I admitted I made a mistake. And I publicly apologized to that person for making that mistake. And believe me, it took a while for me to get there. I'm a very prideful person. I didn't think I was in the wrong. There's many reasons, but looking myself in the mirror is like, what do great leaders do? They admit when they made a mistake. And it took me a while to get there, but I admitted I made a mistake, and quite honestly, it made me a better leader. It made me understand that it's okay to make a mistake. You're human if you make mistakes, and it's okay to apologize for making that mistake. And that's what leadership is about. And it probably took me, 20 years of my career to really realize that at that time.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Earlier, you talked about the balance of art and science, not leaning on data too much, but also not leaning on gut too much.
Yeah.
You also talked about listening to your customers and really letting that drive your strategy. How do you balance or strike that balance when it's a difference between the vocal minority versus a true representation of your customers? How do you decipher the difference?
I don't know if this would answer your question. The way I think about it is great brands hit people in the head and they hit them in the heart. And you can be efficient and have great operations and have great pricing and do all the things, at least in our business, that are really functional and really smart from an operational standpoint. And that is good. But that's only half the equation. Great brands make people fall in love with them. Great brands have this unbelievable connection and almost a cult-like following because they're in love with you. And most of the people in this room has been in love in one way or another. When you're in love, it's irrational. When you're in love, you got to have that brand. And so what I found in my career is hit people in the head, right pricing, clean operations, the right things, but also hit people in the heart because the heart is what keeps people coming back.
Okay, another audience question. So what do you think are some of the key skills that one needs to be a successful marketer? What do you really need if you're going to be a CMO someday? What are the keys there, do you think?
There's a lot. You got to be curious. I talked about being curious. So just make sure as you guys, there's a lot going on in the world today, and technology, people, consumer insights move faster than ever. Stay curious about the world, about economics. I'm not an economic major, but in my job today and in CMO's job, you got to understand what's happening in the financial markets, what's happening as far as pricing and interest rates and inflation. So I'd say, one, stay curious. Two, make sure you understand where the consumer is going. There's a famous quote by Wayne Gretzky, skate to where the puck is going to be, not where it is. So just as consumers change fast, digital change fast, who knew? But 4 years ago, Taco Bell had zero digital business. 4 years ago, zero. Now it's up around 30-35%. But you have to make sure you know where consumers are going and understand, like, hey, most people are not coming into restaurants anymore. They're going to order on their phone. They're going to click and collect. They're going to go through the drive-thru. So just make sure you are truly tuned in to consumer behavior. Three, be a great leader. Again, I think all marketers, because there are a lot of companies, they are the, we'll call it the engine of the brand. Make sure you are a great leader. And probably the most important thing for the people who are in business school or undergrad is have intangibles. It's really important. I was telling the other people, like, I interview a lot of people, and not many times do I just look at their resume. Not many times do I just look at a grade point average. Not many times do I just look at what classes they took. It's really important that you roll up your sleeves. It's really important that you come to work on time. It's really important that no job is too big, too small to do something. And I think more and more today, people look at the technical skills, but they also look at the intangibles. They also look about, do people like to actually work with you? Are you a good person? The intangibles matter more than ever today for big companies. Seattle U is an incredible institution, incredible place to get your degree from. But that can't only be it. You got to have the intangibles as well to be successful these days.
Yeah, so I know you shared a lot of the strategies you shared at that conference, and there was one more that I wanted to point out. And it's along the lines of really prioritizing certain goals and sticking with them rather than just doing everything. And I feel like as an undergrad student, and as many people here are, we're all very ambitious and we want to be able to do as many things as possible. And so my question for you is, how do you prioritize the goals you want to achieve, not only at Taco Bell, but also in your personal life?
That's a good one. I think you got to take time to reflect. And we're all busy. This little device called the cell phone has taken all of our time.
Definitely.
And what I try to do is every morning when I get up, the alarm goes off, and I take 5 minutes to reflect, think about my day, have some gratitude for my family and some of my success. It's 5 minutes, and that 5 minutes seems like an hour, and it's only 5 minutes. But I think for you to reach your goals, you got to take time to pursue your goals. And between class and work and your parents and this and that, a lot of people don't take the time to sit, write down your goals, think about the path to your goals. And so I've always, lately, I didn't do it forever, but I just try to take 5 minutes of my day, give some gratitude, think about my day, think about what can I do different today, what are some challenges for today, and then I get up and go about my day. And I think that can be true in your personal life, and I think that could be true in business. One personal goal to share is I used to run a lot when I was at Nike. And I got busy, and work is always crazy. So I set a goal for myself to be able to run 5 miles. At my height, I ran a half marathon, and now I'm struggling around 2 miles. So I set a personal goal. I'm going to run 5 miles, but I can't achieve that personal goal without every Saturday getting up and going to run. I can't achieve that personal goal if I can have to put the work aside for an hour or two and go work on my endurance. And so as you guys chase your goals, you got to make time for your goals. You can't say one day I'm going to be a CMO or a marketing director, a VP of marketing, or even a CEO, and not put the time in to achieve your goal.
Very well said. Thank you. Thank
you. Sir, was that 5 miles in a row?
Yeah.
At one time.
Hopefully. We're not going to talk about the pace. It's just...
Nah, don't worry about it.
We're not going to talk about it. We're just finish 5 miles.
It doesn't matter. Sir, I'm curious about giving back and the role that...
Please don't call me sir.
Oh.
Sean.
Ah. The Navy sometimes comes out.
I feel like I'm my dad over there.
curious about giving back, the role that has played in your life of people giving back to you and of you giving back to others.
Yeah, I like to tell stories. So I'll tell you a story which will hit two different things. When I became the CMO of Jordan, it was like a town hall. It was like Get to Know Sean, I think was the name of the town hall. So it was a town hall, and it was a lot of softball questions, and it was great. And then it was like, okay, one last question. And the guy in the back of the room, a black guy named Chris Beard, raised his hand. And he said, hey, Sean, you've been very successful as a black man. How are you giving back to black people? And it literally, you could hear a pin drop. And I was on my back feet. And I didn't have a great answer to the question. And obviously it still haunts me today that I didn't have a great answer to that question. So coming out of that meeting, I said, if anybody ever asks me that again, I'm going to have the right question. So if you ask me like how I'm giving back, I think it's two-pronged. One, much to my admin's dismay, it's really important that I come do things like this. Yes, the schedule's crazy. Yes, I'm flying to Vegas in 2 hours. But to be able to come and talk to the Seattle U faculty, students, and people is really important to me because I wish I had somebody do that when I was younger. And so I always want to make sure that no matter what level I achieve, that I'm giving back to people who, if you find just one inspirational message from today, it was worth the trip. And I do a lot of it. I do it within California. I did it when I was at Nike, and I'm going to continue to do it more and more. And then on the other side, it's like, you know, as a Black man who's had some moderate success, are you making sure that you're paving the way for other, we'll call it diverse individuals or Black people? And I joined this group called BECA, which is basically a CMO think tank with some of the best CMOs in the world. And the whole charter of BECA is to make sure we pave the way for diverse, underprivileged individuals. And so that's just two things I'm doing now. And I want to do more and more and make sure that I'm truly giving back, because it's important. I think the people who never forget, like, they were all sitting in this seat once, and it's important that people look up to you and get inspired for you and can just pull things from you. That means a lot to me. I said in the other class, someday people in this audience are going to be very, very famous, aware, you're going to do great things. Make sure you guys come back. Make sure you give back.
Thanks.
You talked about being curious, mm-hmm. and I'm curious what you're looking forward to learning this year. Maybe something that you're looking to learn more about, getting more context, something, you know, maybe it's something to help you with your job, or it could be just to further your personal endeavors.
Yeah, there's a saying that never be an ivory tower marketer or never be an ivory tower CEO. And the phrase is, don't just sit in the headquarters and think you know everything. So what I've been trying to do is get out to our restaurants. And so I didn't do it this time because it's a short trip, but every trip I go on to, I try to go into restaurants and I try to meet the team and I try to understand the line and how to make food and get on the headset and talk about and listen to the drive-through. And I'm curious to learn more about restaurant operations and how it works and the team members. And if you talk to our team members, depending where you are, they've worked at Taco Bell 20 years. Some of it, it's their only job. And just to hear their stories and hear why they love the brand and hear why they work at Taco Bell is incredible. So one thing I want to learn, because I don't come from the industry, is truly the inner workings of how the store works. And I'm excited to do it.
Sean, you want to talk a little bit. You said earlier, I think, you had 5,000 restaurants domestically, 1,000 overseas. What are some of the things that Taco Bell's thinking about when it looks overseas?
Yeah, I told the class that if you're human, you've ate fried chicken, pizza, or hamburger. Who hasn't ate one of those things? Everybody. But when you go to India, China, Malaysia, Japan, tacos are like from outer space. People don't know how to eat them. They don't know how many to order. Do you eat them this way? Do you eat them this way? And so for us, while we're an incredible, successful brand in the U.S., we've got a cult following, we've got stores, we got great momentum, it's almost the exact opposite internationally. You go to India and, you know, maybe our flavor profile's off. You go to China, they don't know how to eat a taco. So for us to be successful internationally, we have to educate people around tacos and burritos and nachos, what they are, why they're so amazing, how to eat them. And you got to educate people on Taco Bell. There's a brand magic of Taco Bell that we're trying to import internationally to certain countries like Spain or India. And if we can educate people on the magic of tacos and educate people on the magic of the Taco Bell brand, we'll be successful. We just haven't figured out quite how to do that yet.
Sir, is there a marketing campaign for Jordan Brand that you worked on that you're most proud of?
That's a good one. I think in Jordan, when I got to Jordan, I think it was the 24 game shoe, which was like my first game shoe. And as you guys know, the game shoe is the biggest launch for the brand. And so what I remember is just, I can't remember the exact campaign, but just I remember working on arguably, or maybe not arguably, the best basketball player of all time's shoe was just something that, you know, it's a, you know, pinch me moment. Like, are you really doing this right now? And I probably worked on 24, 5, 6, and 7. And they're all fantastic. But working on that first one, to be able to say I worked on the launch of a Michael Jordan shoe, was probably one of those career moments where you just can't believe you're in that moment.
All right. Thanks so much, Sean, for being here. Let's give him
Thank
a big
you.
Round of applause. really appreciate you coming back to campus, and I want to thank our panelists for their great questions. Again, thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Leadership Playbook, the podcast edition of the Albers Executive Speaker Series at Seattle University. If you enjoyed what you heard today, consider telling a friend and give us a good rating on iTunes. You can subscribe to our show for free on your favorite podcast app or find us online at leadershipplaybook.org. Find out who our next guests are by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I'm Joe Phillips, the Dean of the Albers School of Business and Economics. Thanks for listening.